You've heard of Grammarly, and you might think it's a fancy spell check, but people on your team have been using it and loving it for years, because it does way more than you realise. Grammarly is a secure AI writing partner that works seamlessly across apps and websites and can write an instant first draft in a few clicks, not a few hours. When every word your team writes is clear, concise, and on brand, companies can save 19 days per employee per year. Learn what better writing can do for your company at Grammarly.com. Grammarly. Easier said, done.
The less your business spends, the more margin you keep. But today, everything costs more. So smart businesses are graduating to NetSuite by Oracle. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, and HR into one proven platform, helping you reduce IT costs, maintenance costs, and manual errors. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move to NetSuite. Backed by popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/earnings. netsuite.com/earnings.
Intel is the spark for the dreamers who do. They dream of a life with no diseases, of cleaner, greener, more reliable energy, of advancing education by bringing AI everywhere. Intel is the spark to start something new, to know that no dream is too daring when you have the right foundation. It starts with Intel. Learn more at intel.com/starts.
We start with a disclaimer. This episode of Bloomberg Technology was taped just as the news broke that Elon Musk is terminating his deal to buy Twitter.
From the heart of where innovation, money, and power collide, in Silicon Valley and beyond, this is Bloomberg Technology with Emily Chang.
I'm Caroline Hyde in New York. I'm in for Emily Chang, and this is Bloomberg Technology. Coming up over the next hour, Elon Musk's escalating battle with Twitter, the $44 billion takeover offer possibly in jeopardy. Plus, TSMC, the world's largest contract chip maker, will report a better-than-expected quarterly revenue, signaling that electronics demand is holding up better than investors feared. And we look at today's jobs report, the U.S. number, and how the tech sector is faring out in the numbers, especially with many companies laying off employees. We'll get to that in but a moment. But first, let's get a check on these markets. Bloomberg's Katie Greifer with quite a run for the Nasdaq.
Quite a run, kind of a muted end to what had been, you know, a week of gains. If you look at the S&P 500 ending down just a hair, about a tenth of a percent. Tech, of course, fared better. The Nasdaq 100 gaining about a tenth of a percent. Your big outperformer was the chip stocks. You had the Philadelphia Semiconductors Index posting a half a percent gain, even with two-year yields rising almost 9 basis points just on the nose after that blockbuster jobs report we got this moment. But let's stay on the chip because they were the outperformer today. Outperformer on the week. If you look at the past 4 days for the SOX index, up 6.5%. Most of those gains came yesterday. You had Samsung come out, report a bigger than expected jump in revenue. That sort of changed the mood music for the space in a really good way. And as you can see, closing out with some really solid gains for an index that has been struggling. And speaking of solid gains, let's end on Bitcoin just for you, Caroline. It had a pretty good week, best week actually since October. But if you look year to date, as you can see, barely made a dent. Bitcoin still down over 52%, close to 53% year to date. And as you look at this, you can see that the line went up a little bit, but again, barely a scratch for what's been a really bad year for Bitcoin.
It has been. Katie, we thank you. And we've kind of been bracing ourselves for a pretty bad jobs report as well. If you look at the anecdotal evidence coming from some of the tech firms, at least, but actually U.S. employers added way more jobs in June than forecast, and the unemployment rate held near a five-decade low. Signs of both strong demand, tight labor market that will keep the federal officials pretty much tilted towards another interest rate hike to the tune of 50 or 75 basis points. Daniel Zhao of Glassdoor joins us now to discuss the current labor market. And Daniel, before we dig deep into the nuances particularly affecting the tech sector, let's talk about broad brush. 372,000 jobs added. It was good.
Yeah, this is a jobs market that fundamentally remains healthy. We're seeing strong job gains. And even though there is rain on the forecast, we still see that skies are clear for the labor market.
Overall, where did we see any weakness of at all? My eyes trained, for example, into the participation levels.
That was a blemish in the report. We did see labor force participation rate come back a little bit, and that was in large part driven by a decrease for Black workers. However, I think that we shouldn't put too much stock into one-month changes, and I do think that as long as the job market continues to remain tight, then we should see that labor force participation rate continue to trend upwards like it's been doing over the last year.
And what keeps it tight, therefore, Daniel, for the meantime?
Well, we still see that employer demand is extremely high. There are over 11 million job openings, almost still two job openings for unemployed worker. And so as long as that relationship holds, then we should continue to see more workers being drawn in from off the sidelines.
I have to say, to that end, I was confused. When you look at the amount of women in the workforce, it's still well below where it was pre-pandemic. As you say, Black workers, Asian workers in particular, men not participating in the levels that they were previously. Is it childcare that's the issue? Is it lack of good pay, benefits? What is it that's holding people back, do you think?
There definitely are some pandemic-related factors. So when we look at childcare and elder care, which I think is especially important to keep in mind given the context of long COVID, those care factors are definitely something that are still holding people out of the economy. COVID itself is still, of course, going on, and that does prevent some workers from fully engaging. But I think it's also important to remember just structurally that because of retirement, because of the aging population, we should naturally expect the labor force participation rate to come down a little bit. And on top of that, we also have other factors like immigration, which has been particularly low over the last few years, holding down some potential labor force gains.
Daniel, I'm interested in therefore going sector by sector, because what we do continue to see is kind of a shifting of where we've been spending. We all want to go and have experiences. We want to go out. We want to eat. We don't want to be buying things in quite the degree that we were before. Now, are you seeing that borne out in terms of labor still?
Well, actually, I think what's really interesting about today's report was that we saw very broad-based job gains. So even though there are concerns that consumer spending is rotating away from goods back to services, we actually saw healthy job gains in retail, around about 15,000 jobs added after a job losses last month. And so that's still an area of strength where we are still seeing job gains, despite some of these anecdotes that we've been hearing from companies, from earning calls of weakness in the retail sector.
Well, I mean, let's talk about some of the anecdotal evidence, because it's not just been in retail, it's been in real estate, particularly technology-driven real estate. We've seen the likes of GameStop saying that they're letting go of workers. I mean, I know these are very tiny pools of labor, but then you have a headline that comes from The Information that says Oracle is discussing laying off thousands of workers as they look to cut, you know, about $1 billion in terms of costs. Are we going to brace ourselves for that, Daniel?
Well, I think today's jobs report is actually a little bit of a surprise, because we actually saw Information add 25,000 jobs, which was well above what you might expect, given we've heard all of these anecdotes, these prominent anecdotes of layoffs. And I think what we might be seeing is that, yes, there are prominent layoffs, but they might not be widespread quite yet. Or at the very least, many workers who are being laid off are able to get up back on their feet pretty quickly and find other roles. Certainly what we've been hearing anecdotally is that maybe candidates have two job offers as opposed to five job offers on the table. But the fact is that they are still finding jobs. They are still being hired.
And what about the wages that they're seeking, Daniel? I mean, what was interesting is probably music to the Federal Reserve's ear is that wage inflation is actually being pretty suppressed at the moment.
Wage inflation is slowing, and I think that that is a result of the slowing labor market overall, because in that example I gave, if somebody has five job offers on the table, then certainly they have a lot more leverage than somebody who only has two or somebody who only has one. In all of those cases, that person is probably getting a new job, but their wage growth potential is very different in each of those scenarios.
Daniel, ciao. Thank you so much. From Glassdoor, of course, senior economist there, talking all about some of the numbers and nuances in the numbers, particularly around the tech sector. We thank him.
We start with a disclaimer. This episode of Bloomberg Technology was taped just as the news broke that Elon Musk is terminating his deal to buy Twitter.
Well, let's check in on where the big deal is or isn't going. Of course, we're talking about Elon Musk's escalating battle over bots with Twitter. He's possibly threatened to walk away from that $44 billion takeover offer. Bloomberg's Kurt Wagner, as always, is all over the story, and he joins us now. So, I mean, is it about bots?
I don't think it's actually about bots. I think, as we've been talking for a couple weeks now, Caroline, I think this is probably about Elon's hope of renegotiating this deal, right? The market has changed dramatically since he agreed to buy Twitter for $54.20 per share in late April. I imagine if he had waited even just a month, he probably could have gotten the company for a much lower price. And I get the sense that he's using this bot issue to try and, you know, force a change there.
Thus far, Twitter has said again and again, we are holding him accountable for the price originally talked of. But realistically, this is heading for the courts, right? If indeed he does walk away.
It feels that way because, as you point out, Twitter really, I guess, has control here in the sense that he has agreed to buy the company for this price, right? He cannot simply walk away without some type of a legal battle, and Twitter seems to be saying that they're willing to do that. Now, I don't know how beneficial that is to Twitter to go spend a lot of time and money fighting him in court. Maybe they would, you know, come to some type of settlement or agreement to lower the price without having to get there. But, you know, it's in Twitter's best interest here to get the best deal for the company. And right now, that's $54.20 a share that he offered back in April.
Certainly. And overall, do you think at some value we're expecting Elon Musk to arrive? Of course, Allen & Co. is advising, we understand, on the deal. So, I mean, this sort of, the debate is going to come up. It's going to be lifted at some point, right?
Yeah, the question is he going to be sharing any new information? I think he last kind of spoke publicly towards the end of June, maybe June 20th, 21st. And he really just kind of said stuff that he'd already been saying before. And then there was a report yesterday, you probably saw from the Washington Post, that he's unhappy still with these bot figures and what Twitter's putting out on the bot front. So it may just be reiterating the kinds of things he's already been saying. Of course, anything he says new would be super significant because I feel like it's been a lot of the same stuff from both sides now for a couple of weeks.
What's the one thing you're looking for on this deal, therefore?
I guess I want to see if he's actually willing to walk away, right? I mean, he sort of threatened it, I'd say two or even three times now. Is he really willing to say, I wish I hadn't done this deal and I'm going to force Twitter's hand to sue me? Now, of course, that's kind of like saying I'm most looking forward to the, you know, the big fight scene at the end of the movie. Of course, everyone is, but I do really think that that's the main hangup here, you know, is he really going to do what he seems to be threatening to do?
Tell us a little bit about how Twitter is faring in all of this.
It's been a tough go if you're an employee of Twitter for the last few months. Not only is this deal kind of hovering over everything, kind of creates a little bit of awkwardness around, you know, what should we focus on? What should we build? But they have said they're going to do cost cuts. They did a hiring freeze. They even rescinded some job offers. And then there was news yesterday that they actually laid off 100 people. It's a very small percentage of the overall workforce, but you get the idea that things just aren't really moving in the growth direction for them right now. And when you add that on top of the fact that they're waiting for this deal to possibly close, but possibly not, I just think it creates a really awkward situation if you're an employee at the company today.
And has it thus far in any way, you know, sometimes bad news is, well, all PR is good PR. Has it made people turn to the social media platform? Have people re-engaged with it than previously before because it's been in the news cycle so much?
You know, it's a good question. We'll actually probably find out because the second quarter just ended, of course. Now, last time they didn't do a full earnings. They didn't do a call. They just kind of released kind of a bare bones press release with some numbers, but it'll be interesting to see if the user growth is still there. You know, is this driving people to the service? I'm a little skeptical only because a lot of things that drive people to Twitter are major news events, you know, like an election, for example. Yeah. I'm not sure if the idea of there being a acquisition is the kind of news event that's going to bring people to the service.
Just stick with us for a moment because we've got a 13D, as we like to get, just on a Friday when everyone's going home, but we are getting some sort of undated 13D coming from Elon Musk, of course, regarding his bid for Twitter. And understandably, this is we're going to have to read through it in real time overall. But it seems to be, once again, updating us. Previously, we've had sort of how much of the deal has basically got backing from private sources, as we understand. And it amends the Schedule 13D initially filed by Elon Musk with the SEC on April the 5th with respect to the offer, it says, amended on the 11th, the 14th, the 21st, the 26th, the 27th. I mean, it goes on to say all the other times that it's been amended overall. But it looks as though that they are amending, adding the following: the information that sent a letter to Twitter, formally notifying Twitter that the reporting person is terminating their merger agreement, Kurt. The foregoing description of the reporting person's letter is qualified in its entirety by reference to the full text of the letter, a copy of which is attached hereto at Exhibit P and incorporated herein for reference. The letter, therefore, I'm going to be opening up. This is real-time reporting on Bloomberg as well at the moment. So it does seem as though Elon Musk has filed an amended 13D. And as I've been saying, it looks as though they are saying that they are terminating their merger agreement. So saying on July the 8th. What do you make of it? I mean, you're hearing me reading out live on air at the moment, and we're going to be rushing for every single reporter that's currently in the building. But do tell us as to whether or not this could well have been expected overall. They say this is actually a letter that's dated to Twitter Inc. Ms. Gadd, it says, we refer to the agreement in section 6.4. They talk about the business, for any reasonable business purpose related to the consummation of the transaction, Twitter has not complied with contractual obligations, it says. For nearly 2 months, Mr. Musk has sought the data and information necessary to make an independent assessment of the prevalence of fake or spam accounts on Twitter's platform. This information is fundamental to Twitter's business and financial performance, and he says thus far necessary, they say, and is necessary to consummate the transaction. So it looks as though Mr. Musk has decided that, look, we can't do it because we haven't got the right amount of information on bots.
Do you see my face here? This is the face of someone who's learning. You know, that the last 3 months of work and reporting that I've done is just kind of the tip of the iceberg here. It sounds like we have more to go. But am I surprised? No, only because we've seen this move in this direction. Right, we were just talking about that they haven't been able to agree on this, and that you know, Elon seems very focused on reducing the cost of this deal. I will say I didn't expect did not expect him to walk away from something entirely. Again, I thought that he would try to renegotiate, but you know, we need to go look at this further and figure out exactly what he's trying to do here. And maybe this is a first step towards a renegotiation, right? But it certainly feels like this thing that has been boiling for now a few weeks clearly is reaching the boiling point, right?
It says, of course, his financial advisors and Morgan Stanley have been requesting critical information from Twitter as far back as May 9th. How much have the banks been involved in all of this? How much has Elon Musk had a lot of help and backers from elsewhere?
Yeah, I mean, he's had a whole lot of advisors throughout this whole process, right? I mean, these things are not, it's not just Elon Musk and Parag Agrawal from Twitter sitting around hashing this out, right? There are entire teams of people that are passing information, that have been in contact daily about this kind of stuff. I think the debate has been, what is Twitter giving Elon, and what is Elon demanding? I think in this case, you know, Twitter has said, hey, we're going to give you the fire hose of tweets. We're going to give you every public tweet on the service. And Elon, clearly, as you just read, is saying that's not sufficient for calculating what I need to calculate, which is the percentage of bots. And I think the real issue here is that they just don't see eye to eye on this bot issue. And clearly that's big enough for him to pull this offer. But again, it feels like we've been building this for some time. To imagine he had a little buyer's remorse, given that he made his bid in April, and what we've seen what the market has been doing the last few months since then.
All of this makes it feel to me that, no, I reiterate the same sort of question before, but this is destined for the courts, right?
I think so, right? Because we were just talking about, Twitter has said repeatedly, we plan to enforce the merger agreement, right? They have come to an agreement. So even him saying, hey, I'm pulling out from this thing, Twitter, my understanding is that they legally can try and force him to buy the company for the price that he agreed to. So I don't know what him, again, need to look closer at the filing. I learned about it just as you were reading it to me on air here. But I do think that this feels like it's headed for a court 100%.
And just remind me of the breakup fee.
Yeah, so there is a $1 billion breakup fee, but it's not as simple as Elon just simply, you know, paying $1 billion mm-hmm. and walking away. There has to be other elements of the deal that kind of fall apart, and then he would pay that as a penalty. Again, it's not a fee that you can pay just because you feel like you wish you got a better deal.
Kurt, can't say what we'd do without you. Thank you for being there in real time on telly to be able to read through a 13D filing with me. We thank you so much, Kurt Wagner.
Thank you.
So as we say, Elon Musk is terminating his Twitter merger agreement. We understand a new 13D being filed joyfully on a Friday afternoon, just everyone wants to head out for a well-deserved rest. He says that Twitter has failed to provide essential information and hasn't complied with contractual obligations. All of this, of course, regarding those all-important bots, he says. Shares of Twitter sinking in after hours. Join us for more. This is Bloomberg.
What if everyone at work were an expert communicator? What if every doc, message, and email they wrote was perfectly clear and concise? Inbox numbers would drop, customer satisfaction scores would rise, and everyone would be more productive. That's where Grammarly comes in. Grammarly is a secure AI writing partner that understands your business and can transform it through better communication. Companies that use Grammarly save an average of 19 days per employee per year. That's because with Grammarly's AI, what used to take a few hours only takes a few clicks, like generating an instant first draft in your company voice or tailoring a message to your specific audience and goals. And Grammarly's personalized on-brand writing help is built in everywhere your team works, across 500,000 apps and websites. Plus, it's safe, secure, and already IT approved. Join 70,000 teams who trust Grammarly with their words and their data. Learn more at Grammarly.com. Grammarly, easier said, done.
Success is more than the final destination. It's a path you take one step at a time. It's discipline. It's teamwork. And it's the drive and passion inside of us that comes before all recognition. It's what Stifel's been doing for over 130 years. Quietly, yet strategically, Stifel's become one of the fastest growing wealth management and investment banking firms in the country. Our financial advisors go beyond traditional wealth management to provide clients with direct access to one of the industry's largest equity research franchises and a leading middle market investment bank. Because success is the drive it takes to keep climbing, the passion to keep investing, the best of each of us made better by the best in all of us. And that is where success meets success. Start your journey at Stifel.com. That's STIFEL.com.
Stifel Nicholas and Company Incorporated, member SIPC and NYSE.
Intel is the spark for the dreamers who do. Those with the ambitious, out-of-reach ideas, begging to become real solutions. They share a vision for how our world and our lives can thrive when bold thinking meets strong silicon. They dream of a life with no diseases, of cleaner, greener, more reliable energy through the power of supercomputing. They dream of trust and privacy for all, of advancing and expanding education by bringing AI everywhere. Intel is the spark to start something new, to build something better, to know that no dream is too daring when you have the right foundation. It starts with Intel. Learn more at intel.com/starts.
We start with a disclaimer. This episode of Bloomberg Technology was taped just as the news broke that Elon Musk is terminating his deal to buy Twitter.
Let's get back to the breaking news. Twitter shares falling after hours after Elon Musk has filed a 13D, amended 13D, saying that he wants to be backing out of the offer to be buying Twitter for $44 billion. He's terminating the merger agreement, saying it's failed to provide essential information and they sometimes ignored requests for information. I'm pleased to say that Alex Barinka is joining us now. You were meant to be talking about another social media platform, and we're very pleased that you're going to take some questions on this new breaking news, of course, being dumped on a Friday afternoon, Alex. And really wonderful to have you back on with me. It's been a long time since we've spoken. Talk to us about what you're making of this particular move. We all sort of saw it coming.
Yeah, and I was looking at this letter here, and you'll excuse me having to peek at my phone because it just hit the wire. Something that I think is super interesting in this letter, Elon Musk in the filing is basically trying to invoke some of those requirements to break up this deal. I see here he's saying, calling out the company, saying that the claim that fewer than 5% of its daily active users are false or spam accounts is dramatically understating the spam spam accounts that are on the app. He's also, you know, there are some fighting words in here. I'm seeing him say this understatement might cause or is reasonably likely to result in a company material adverse effect. In filings terms, that means that would be something that would need to be disclosed to investors, but it does seem like Elon is fixating on that question of how many of the users on Twitter are verified users and not bots. And he's calling in and calling out the company here, making an assumption with, you know, math that I'm not sure where it's coming from, but he's saying that this claim that fewer than 5% of the daily active users are false accounts is actually not true. So that's the biggest thing that's popping out to me here. That and the fact that he says he's asked for a lot of this information time and time again, hasn't gotten it. And because of that kind of confluence of events that I know you all have been covering very closely over the last few months, he's saying those are the reasons why he is calling it quits on this potential deal.
And as we know, that ain't going to be the end of it. Alex Barinka, thank you so much for jumping on, for getting involved in the breaking news, for calling out really some of the most prevalent parts of this particular 13D filing. And as we know, as now, it looks as though Elon Musk is trying to back out of his offer for Twitter. Breaking news for this Friday, just to add a little spice before your weekend, that Elon Musk has indeed terminated the Twitter merger agreement. He is, of course, sending Twitter shares spiraling lower in after hours. He says some of Twitter's monthly daily active user disclosures are false or indeed misleading, and he believes the spam accounts are higher than 5%. I'm pleased to say Crystal Tse is with us. She's still in the building. She's willing to jump on air with us. And Crystal, of course, you've been looking at some of the nuances to this because, yes, he might try and terminate this deal, but as we know, this isn't going to be as easy as all that.
It's not very easy because we have reported that he during, it's what, first of all, one of the quickest ever M&A processes. And it was so quick because he waived some of the due diligence processes. And now he's coming back and saying that he has requested information and Twitter hasn't really been complying with that. And Twitter has been saying otherwise. So the really interesting angle here is whether Musk actually get out of this deal and whether Twitter is going to sue. So that's the next thing that we're really looking at, and like you said, it's not going to be as easy as he as just, you know, walking away.
Many had anticipated that the next stop is the courts, is Delaware. The problem here is who's got the financial might, the wealthiest man in the world, to drag this through the courts, or indeed a Twitter that has a fiduciary duty to its shareholders to, yes, get the best price deal, but also not to spend all its money on legal fees.
That's exactly right. So whether Twitter is going to fight this fight or hash out a deal with Musk, that remains to be seen. Interesting to note that Sun Valley is still going on. Yeah. Musk is there, so as Twitter's CFO. So whether they can hash some deal out during Sun Valley, you know, the billionaire's retreat, that could be interesting. But it definitely dropped at a very unexpected time, Friday afternoon.
And it has to be said that, to be fair to Elon Musk, yes, he decided to waive some due diligence, but he made this bet, this offer, just before the market really started to hit freefall. We'd actually been falling basically ever since the top of the market in January. However, we are now very much in a bear market when it comes to the NASDAQ. We have seen tech valuations plummet. And arguably, is this just him trying to get a better deal for himself?
We've actually seen this kind of scenario before, right? The market can turn very quickly. If you remember in the beginning of COVID, Victoria's Secret was super close to getting bought and that deal got reversed just because of how much the market has changed. So that could be one of Musk's arguments here, that the market has turned so much that it's no longer the same price. Well, that to me sounds like a price recut, not an entire termination. So, but he just entirely skipped that and just went to the termination in the 13D that we saw just now. The whole story is still unfolding. Could there be a deal? Could he just actually be using this as a gesture to recut the price? We don't know any of that yet. We're going to keep reporting, and if we have anything more, you see it on Bloomberg News.
And is it a deeply expensive game of poker that we're all trying to read every single side on? And overall, like, the market has seen a complete drop in M&A, right? Like, yes, there have been some one-off enormous deals at the beginning of the year for the first half that have managed to support the overall M&A numbers coming in, Microsoft, Activision, for example. But really, we've had every deal put on ice thus far.
That's true. A lot of processes that have been going on had to, you know, either scale back or just entirely was put on ice, like you said. A couple of big deals like the VMware are really holding up the M&A volume this year so far, but we are actually seeing M&A volume significantly lower than last year. That said, last year was an outlier. Everything last year was just enormous, you know, in terms of volume. Whether it comes back, and it will be extremely interesting. Also, this year's volume so far has hinged on Twitter and Elon. So yes, it could just entirely reverse this year's M&A outlook.
Some bankers might be cross. I'm pleased to say also with us, with Crystal C's expertise, is Kurt Wagner, of course, a man who's been following this headline by headline, blow by blow, 13D by 13D. And it was hilarious how many amendments that have been made since that all-important April date when we first learned he was going to be making that offer. But Kurt, anything else that you've seen within the 13D this time that has caught your attention?
Well, I mean, he's obviously creating a narrative here, right, with this letter that he sent to Twitter today, dated July 8th, where he says that the company did not cooperate, that he's been asking for certain data, that they, you know, have made it difficult. I think the letter also included some information about, you know, how they weren't operating under normal business conditions. We talked in the last segment, I believe, about there being some hiring freezes at Twitter. They have fired some top executives. Now, what's interesting about him kind of claiming that maybe Twitter was making poor business decisions while we wait for this deal to close is that I got the sense, and as I was told kind of throughout the reporting, that Elon didn't really care too much about all that stuff.
Yeah.
Like, he wasn't worried that, you know, CEO Parag Agrawal was still kind of running the company as you would run a company, right? So it's just funny that these things that didn't seem to be a problem are suddenly making their way into this narrative of why Twitter is at fault for why this deal is falling apart. Because certainly from the letter, Elon Musk is pointing the blame to the company, not saying, hey, I've changed my mind.
Yeah, just going back to that TED talk that he made just at the time that he's putting in the offer, and it seemed to be not about profit. It was more like a move for society. He wanted to, of course,
right,
this is all about free speech. This was about making this a private company rather than a public company. He was doing some sort of service. Why now does, well, sort of he care about all the nuances? And it does feel ultimately he cares about the price.
Right. And that's what I think the answer is. I don't think that it's the nuances. I think it is that this ultimately looked and became a bad deal for him. And so then all of a sudden, all these things that didn't matter a few weeks ago suddenly do matter because they help him in his argument that, hey, I tried to make a good faith deal and Twitter did not. Right. That's what we're going to start hearing. That's what we're seeing in this letter. And I imagine that will be the argument moving forward. Now, the funny thing about the bot issue, right, is that Elon Musk has been complaining about Twitter bots since before he bought the company. So he knew and has known that bots are a part of Twitter. He's had bad experience with them before. And now he's, you know, again, coming out and using the bot issue as a reason to maybe walk away from this deal or at least attempt to walk away from this deal. So, you know, I really think we're going to be parsing this for a while. But my gut initial read here is that he's really trying to, you know, set up his narrative for why he thinks Twitter is responsible for this deal falling apart and not him. And obviously he's doing that because if he's the one who walks away or makes this an issue, Twitter might be able to sue him to try and force him to complete the deal.
Kurt Wagner, we thank you so much for all the breaking news analysis, and Crystal C as well, really jumping in the share and giving us such analysis and nuance to what we are learning, of course. That is, Elon Musk is looking to terminate the deal to buy Twitter. Welcome back to Bloomberg Technology. Guess what? Breaking news. Elon Musk, as many had predicted, has indeed started the process of trying to terminate the deal to buy Twitter. He has filed an amended 13D and, of course, is calling out failure to provide essential information, ignoring of requests for information, in particular what he calls a number of bots that he thinks are far in excess of 5%. All of this has driven Twitter's stock down after hours and moving some other shares as well. KJ Greifeld, I'm pleased to say, still in the house with us. And of course, our cross-asset reporter, you've been looking at a lot of notes leading up to this about probabilities of whether this deal will get done.
Mm-hmm. It's been interesting to watch sort of the Wall Street community talk about this deal. And Dan Ives from Wedbush put out a note yesterday, actually, saying that there's a 60% chance that this deal even gets done. That was yesterday, of course, following some Washington Post reporting. They also suggested that there could be a 35% chance that Musk walks away from the deal altogether, which obviously has borne out now. And obviously, the bots question has been a big question regarding this deal, but there's also the share price to consider. Of course, when Musk had made this offer, it was at $54.20 a deal, $54.20. And that had been sort of floated in the analyst community that maybe that price is just too lofty. Maybe they'll negotiate it down more. And you can see Twitter shares right now trading around $34.54. So that premium, that between the two had grown and obviously growing now. And now the deal is terminated.
And I also want to ask you a bit about the Tesla market reaction, one that you'd pointed out on Twitter itself, ironically, as we're all using that social media platform to break the news. But remind us as to why Tesla might bounce on it.
So the deal here is that obviously Musk is the CEO of Tesla. And so the bull case behind why you're probably seeing the shares move higher in after hours, I see Tesla shares up over 1% at the moment, higher than when I tweeted this, is that perhaps Musk will now refocus his attention on Tesla, supposedly, his main company. But as we know, I mean, Musk has always been sort of a part-time CEO of Tesla. He obviously has a lot of projects going on, including SpaceX. So we'll see if this move holds when we actually get into real trading on Monday. But interesting to see the after-hours reaction. You see the knee-jerk move lower in Twitter shares down over 6%. You look at Tesla shares up, moving up to 1.5% or so now. So that is the knee-jerk.
Katie Greifeld, as always, we thank you for the knee-jerk reactions, the ultimate reactions. I'm very pleased to say also ahead of Wall Street Week is our very own David Weston, of course, anchor of that show, anchor of course, of the politics show for us as well, and also a man who knows an awful lot about the law.
Yeah.
And this is going to the courts, right?
Yeah, the one clear winner in this that I can identify are the lawyers. There are going to be a lot of lawyers charging a lot of money and are going to pay a lot of billable hours as a result. I mean, I think there's so much we don't know at this point, and we know that now Elon Musk says he's not going to go forward with the deal. We have to take him at his word. At the same time, he has some legal obligations he has to address. The Twitter board's been very steadfast in saying, we're holding to your deal. And you have to ask, is he really getting out of it, or is this a negotiation? Is this a negotiation over the $1 billion breakup fee or a lower price, as Katie just suggested, for the company? Let's be honest. He would not have offered $44 billion a month after he offered it. It was no longer a sensible price. And he's saying, I'm not sure I want it at that price. We'll see. But I'll guarantee you there's a lot of legal action coming up.
And of course, David, it is the fiduciary duty of the board to fight for the highest possible price. It is also going to be incredibly costly for the board of Twitter and indeed Twitter's executive team to be paying these sort of legal fees when we know it's up against the wealthiest man in the world.
Absolutely. And two other things I'd add to that. Number one, there's a fairness opinion that was rendered by Goldman Sachs and others saying this is a fair price. It's awfully hard for the board to say, okay, we have a fairness opinion saying that price is the fair price. Now we're just going to give up on it. We're not going to pursue that anymore at all. That's a tough thing to do. And the board has a pretty good legal argument, I would think, and they've been pretty steadfast. At the same time, I suspect part of what's driving Mr. Musk is the board has shown very little willingness to negotiate with him. And this, as I say, it may be he's really trying to get out of it. It's also possible that in fact he's really trying to get a real negotiation going on.
And also, David, going back to how this deal erupted, he did this in a completely bombastic way for many a lawyer. It felt as though documents were put in too late, documents weren't filled out in the normal way, and indeed it seemed as though he waived his rights to due diligence.
Well, he did, I think, explicitly waive his rights to due diligence, which says something. But say bombastic in Elon Musk is not necessarily contradictory,
yes,
right?
It's
not
a
total surprise it would work the way. But I think from talking to people who know Elon Musk and have dealt with him even during this time, I think there's a good part of Elon Musk that really did want to buy Twitter, maybe still does want to buy Twitter. He genuinely wants to buy this company, thinks he can do something good with this company. So I don't think he was just toying with it at all. I just think he's definitely of two minds, apparently.
David Weston, what would we do without your legal expertise? And indeed, of course, a man who's going to go on and talk about this a little bit. And of course, your show, which we all want to be watching, Wall Street Week, Balance of Power as well. Of course, you can tune in to David Weston there. But we thank also our own Katie Greifeld for the market moves and the reactions. More for you in terms of analysis to the breaking news this Friday. Of course, Elon Musk backing away from that $44 billion deal for Twitter. This is Bloomberg.
What if everyone at work were an expert communicator? What if every doc, message, and email they wrote was perfectly clear and concise? Inbox numbers would drop, customer satisfaction scores would rise, and everyone would be more productive. That's where Grammarly comes in. Grammarly is a secure AI writing partner that understands your business and can transform it through better communication. Companies that use Grammarly save an average of 19 days per employee per year. That's because with Grammarly's AI, what used to take a few hours only takes a few clicks, like generating an instant first draft in your company voice or tailoring a message to your specific audience and goals. And Grammarly's personalized on-brand writing help is built in everywhere your team works, across 500,000 apps and websites. Plus, it's safe, secure, and already IT approved. Join 70,000 teams who trust Grammarly with their words and their data. Learn more at Grammarly.com. Grammarly. Easier said, done.
Success is more than the final destination. It's a path you take one step at a time. It's discipline. It's teamwork. And it's the drive and passion inside of us that comes before all recognition. It's what Stifel's been doing for over 130 years. Quietly, yet strategically, Stifel's become one of the fastest-growing wealth management and investment banking firms in the country. Our financial advisors go beyond traditional wealth management to provide clients with direct access to one of the industry's largest equity research franchises and a leading middle market investment bank. Because success is the drive it takes to keep climbing, the passion to keep investing, the best of each of us made better by the best in all of us. And that is where success meets success. Start your journey at Stifel.com. That's STIFEL.com.
Stifel Nicholas and Company Incorporated, member SIPC and NYSE.
Intel is the spark for the dreamers who do. Those with the ambitious, out-of-reach ideas, begging to become real solutions. They share a vision for how our world and our lives can thrive when bold thinking meets strong silicon. They dream of a life with no diseases, of cleaner, greener, more reliable energy through the power of supercomputing. They dream of trust and privacy for all, of advancing and expanding education by bringing AI everywhere. Intel is the spark to start something new, to build something better, to know that no dream is too daring when you have the right foundation. It starts with Intel. Learn more at intel.com/starts.
The disastrous scenario has occurred, as according to Dan Ives as well. This is, of course, a key analyst on all things Twitter, putting out a note as we speak from Wedbush, Dan Ives, saying that the termination that we've just learned of, Elon Musk trying to terminate the $44 billion deal for Twitter, is a disaster scenario for Twitter and its board, as now the company will battle Musk in an elongated court battle to recoup the deal and or the breakup fee of $1 billion. At minimum. To discuss this a little bit more amid all of this analysis, I want to bring in one, Ed Ludlow, who has been on the plane back from one Sun Valley event where absolutely everyone has been talking about this deal. You managed to read the letter, the 13D. What were people saying about this deal to you, Ed Ludlow?
You know, all of the investors I've spoken to over the last few days have been bracing for this, the idea that a termination was possible. We know about the $1 billion reverse termination fee for both parties, but, you know, investors are bracing for an outcome where we have a long, protracted legal battle between Elon Musk and Twitter's board. You look through the letter that Elon Musk sent to Twitter's chief legal officer, Gadda, you know, he's pretty clear. He made multiple attempts to request information about how the scientific approach that Twitter's board was taking to quantifying the level of bots on the platform, right? This idea that there's less than 5% of bots on the platform in terms of the user base has been a long-standing boilerplate that Twitter have used in regulatory filings for many years. And so it's kind of weird and surprising that this was an issue for Musk in the first place, because you remember back April 25th, when he signed the deal, he waived due diligence. Anyway, you know, with the news as it is, breaking that he's terminated, you know, everyone I've spoken to in Sun Valley, it thinks that this is bad for Twitter. It's a disaster, as Dan I put it, because, you know, they're already cutting costs. They've been bracing for a recession in which they're going to have to lower R&D spending, lower headcount. Ad market is looking okay globally, but it's not perfect. and now they're going to have to go to court and get this done. And it was only yesterday, Cara, as you remember, that they reiterated they intended to follow through with the terms of the original deal. And yet here we are, me on a jet plane, you in the studio, and Elon Musk walking away from the deal.
Just remind us, because he talks of not enough information. He talks of multiple requests. I thought Twitter had been delivering information regarding bots.
So in the letter, Elon Musk's attorneys say that by Twitter's own admission in the communications they've made since the end of the beginning of May and through the June period, that the data was incomplete. Twitter's argument basically is that a third party, be it a third party installed by the Musk team, a third party chosen by Twitter, cannot verify the level of bots on the platform. The reason being that Twitter's methodology for verification uses a mix of private data that they hold as the platform operator and private data such that they're protecting the consumer and public data, and only Twitter has access to that. And that's what the discussion is around, how complete that data was.
Yeah. Ed, remind us, because Elon Musk is due to be I think he's already arrived, has he not? Or is at least due to arrive at Sun Valley. He's meant to be giving a speech tomorrow. And the key issue is, Allen & Co, were they an advisor on the deal in some way? This could be an amazing meeting of all the top executives, because I understand the CEO and the CFO of Twitter are also at Sun Valley.
Yeah, look, I'm just going to say it out loud. I wish I was still in Idaho, or I wish I was with you in the studio, because this is the most crazy story of my career and lifetime. That Allen & Co. is an advisor on the Twitter side. Okay, Allen & Co. is a longstanding investment bank and advisor for Twitter. And then on the other side, they've invited Elon Musk to the conference. No one saw Parag Agrawal, Ned Segal, and Elon Musk in the same space. As you know, I asked Ned Segal and Parag Agrawal last night if they were worried about Elon Musk walking away. Twice they declined to answer the question, and 24 hours later, he walked away. So there we go.
There we go. Ed Ludlow, we'll let you go for a moment too. Thank you so much for jumping on the phone with us, Ed Ludlow, with the analysis. We've also got some expert analysis from a senior analyst on Twitter of Wedbush Securities, one Dan Ives, who has a rating neutral on Twitter, who has a price of $38.79, and who has a 12-month price target of $43. But Dan Ives, you've already put out a note. You're a busy man. What do you make of this walkaway?
I mean, for Twitter, it's a nightmare scenario, because now as a standalone company, stock could be $25 to $30 on Monday, and they face just a brutal court battle with Musk. And this has been, a circus show in terms of from the beginning. It never made sense as to why Musk wanted to buy it. But now the way it ends, it's just, it really ends, it puts them between a rock and a hard place, and the street's going to, really have a hard time with this in terms of Twitter basically being viewed as damaged goods.
I'm really interested in, and originally, as we were hearing when we were talking to David Weston, that, $44 billion was deemed fair value for overall Twitter, as said, I think, by Goldman Sachs. Why do you have a fair value price of $38.79? What is it? What's the underlying business model? How much has that eroded since Elon Musk first put in his offer?
Well, first off, $44 billion from the beginning never made sense. And that's why there was no other bidder within miles of it. We always thought fair value for Twitter was somewhere in an acquisition, 42 to 45. And now the fake account bot issue, as that's really come to the forefront.
Yeah.
I think now this is a stock that's going to have a two in front of it because of those metrics. And also, the market's changed so much since the deal, whether it's Musk getting cold feet, and now it really sends us all into a tailspin in terms of Twitter. And I also think Musk comes out with a black eye in terms of how this was all handled.
I agree, and many would agree, I think, in terms of like how news organizations view M&A offers. But I'm interested in your take from a $44 billion price tag. What is it about the bots? I thought we sort of knew about the bots and the fact that, what is it that from a Twitter perspective could have been done better on that?
Well, it's all about, is it 5% or is it 20%? And I think even though the bot issue's always been a black cloud over Twitter's name, even if you go back over the years, now it comes down to just how big is that number, because that's the monetization, that's the metrics. Then on the other side, others will argue Musk just, this is a scapegoat. It's cold feet.
Yeah.
He basically woke up one day, decided not to do it in typical Musk fashion. And now the knives will be sharpened going into what's just going to be a Game of Thrones court battle.
We currently understand, of course, at the moment breaking news continues, but we do understand that the Twitter board is committed to closing this transaction, according to Brett Taylor. Now, the Twitter board is planning legal action to enforce this agreement. Dan, how much of a money suck is that?
Look, I think right now, I mean, Twitter is going to officially come out with that stance. This deal, when the stock was trading at $38, it was telling you $54.20 was never going to happen. Now the question is there still some chance that there's some renegotiation that happens? I think the ill will is too much at this point. And now, Monday, Twitter's going to be looking at a stock with a 2 in front of it, probably 25, high 20s. And now this starts to go into free fall.
Dan Ives, we want to thank you so much. Senior analyst over there at Wedbush Securities already putting out a note on this deal. As we say, the Twitter board is planning legal action to enforce this agreement. This is coming from Brett Taylor. He is the chairman of Twitter. He's a busy man because he's also the co-CEO, we know, of course, of Salesforce, but he is on the board of Twitter. And he is saying, look, we're going to be fighting this. They intend to close the transaction at $54.20 a share price. They received a notice of the purported termination from Musk. They intend to close this transaction. They're confident in the merger pact. For all of this, this is Bloomberg in New York. Have a good weekend.
Intel is the spark for the dreamers who do. They dream of a life with no diseases, of cleaner, greener, more reliable energy, of advancing education by bringing AI everywhere. Intel is the spark to start something new, to know that no dream is too daring when you have the right foundation. It starts with Intel. Learn more at intel.com/starts.
Success. It's discipline. It's teamwork. It's the drive and passion inside of us that comes before all recognition. It's the best of each of us made better by the best in all of us. It's what Stifel's been doing for over 130 years. And it's why Stifel is one of the fastest growing global wealth management and investment banking firms in the industry. Stifel. It's where success meets success. Start your journey at Stifel.com. That's Stifel.com.
Stifel Nicolaus and Company Incorporated. Member SIPC and NYSE.
You know, it can be hard to see the challenges that people we work with every day are going through. Invisible struggles like stress and burnout, caregiving for a loved one, or being misunderstood. But insight, awareness, and empathy will help us better see the issues they're dealing with. And that can make us and our companies healthier, too. I'm Holly Robinson-Pete. Join us on The Visibility Gap, a new podcast presented by Cigna Healthcare. Download it wherever you get your podcasts.